Welcome to Hey That's Me, a commentary podcast. I'm Patrick Kottner. If you've never listened to this podcast before, me and my co-host Brian Lynch, who's a renowned Hollywood screenwriter, he wrote Minions and Secret Life of Pets and Big Helium Dog, which is going to be available on Blu-ray next month in September, and you can hear both of us do a commentary on that movie, which is very exciting. He's worked on so many things, truly so many things, but for this podcast, we watch movies and TV shows with people who worked on them and do audio commentaries on those movies and TV shows. So it could be a costume designer, it could be a writer, it could be an actor, it could be a production assistant, or sometimes, if you're lucky, it could be a director, and today, we have a director. He's a return guest. A few weeks ago, we watched an episode of Kids in the Hall that he worked on. He directed all the pre-tape segments for that. And today we're watching Daredevil Season 1, Episode 8, Shadows in the Glass, and our guest is Steven Sergic. It's a really fun episode. Daredevil, of course, back right now after many years away. There's a new season of the show on Disney Plus, and this is an episode that primarily focuses on Wilson Fisk, played by Vincent D'Onofrio. It was written by Stephen DeKnight, who worked on that show a lot, and it's a really gritty, cool-looking episode. Steven worked on a ton of the Marvel Netflix shows. I think he has directed the most of those shows out of anybody, and he really knows how to like make those episodes sing. He's in it, and he knows what works and what doesn't in that world, and he's very good at it. And it's very interesting just hearing him, a guy who works on so many different shows and movies and everything, what goes into being sort of a director, you know, for hire a little bit. Like, you come in, you work on this, and then they finish it off and put it on the air. Like, you're not the guy who's there for every single episode. You're the guy who's there for every fourth episode or every, you know, fifth episode, something like that. I hope you enjoy it. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/commentary. You'll get heads up on who we're recording with, and you're able to send in questions for us to ask. We put full episodes out synced up with the video, so you can just watch it like that. There's a whole bunch of stuff you can do on there. Patreon.com/commentary. Go toss a buck or two there. Also, if you're so inclined, you can go leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Ideally, a 5-star review. In a perfect world, a 5-star review. But also, if you don't like the show, you can leave a 5-star review and say, I don't like the show, and that's totally fine. But, it'd be nice if you liked the show. It'd be fun. I want to get, from this episode, if you're listening to this episode, I want to get 5 more reviews. So if you're listening to this and you're like, I haven't left one, I'm talking to you. Let's see if we can do it. I hope you enjoy it. This, it's on Disney Plus. You can pull it up and sync it up. And we're going to start in
3, 2, 1, go.
Here we are. Daredevil, Shadows in the Glass.
Season 1, Episode 8. I'm Brian.
I'm Patrick.
I'm Steve.
Steven. Which do you prefer?
Depends. You know, it all works. Oh, there it is. Okay. It's on screen, and we're coming off the sheets, and there is
Vincent. Look at him.
D'Onofrio.
You did a lot of Marvel episodes.
The monster. Yes, I did. I was very fortunate. I started with the one we're watching right now. Mm-hmm. I was brought in to do this origin episode with Kingpin. And it worked out really well, and so they kept bringing me back until they regretted it.
Do you know why they brought you in? Like, what specifically you had worked on that they liked of yours? Or,
well, the truth of the matter is I'd been working with one of the guys there, Kareem Zarek, who was in charge of development and new projects at the time. And him and Jeff were really tight, and I got to know them. And they knew my work from, well, you know, from a bunch of stuff that I'd been doing, including, but not limited to, Persons of Interest, mm-hmm. Kids in the Hall. Mm-hmm. So, but I had worked with Kareem in New Orleans on a series earlier, and which will remain nameless, but it was a really good adventure, and we got along very well, and that's really important. So.
Yeah. When he's cooking these eggs here, this is a stupid question I'm going to ask you.
Never a stupid question.
Who eats all these eggs at the end?
Well, yeah, a stupid question.
Yeah, it's a stupid question.
No. First of all, you know, when we're shooting this, because, you know, we don't want to use Vincent's time up, you know, needlessly, he does kind of the shots where you see him in the same shot. And then anytime there's a close-up of an egg, we're on a stage doing, tabletop somewhere.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly where that was. It was a... everybody said, you know, oh yes, you're going to be working with Vincent D'Onofrio. Are you okay? Are you ready for that? Yeah. I was like, he was the most reasonable man alive.
Was he? Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I mean, it seems like he loves working on this show.
Yes.
It feels like he really loves this character and loves this universe. So I imagine, you know, he's having a good time.
And this was early on, though, and he was making some choices on the character, pretty like, you know, how he would. But, you know, he made them and I supported him.
There he is.
Does working in the comic book world get nervous for you just because the fans are so particular?
Well, good question, as they say. Mm-hmm. there are those damn cufflinks. So in the world of Marvel, they have people on the set. Oh, look at this. What did we do there with that kid? Oh, yeah. So they have people on the set that are fastidious Marvel geeks. They mm-hmm. know everything about the Marvel universe. They mm-hmm. know the way the psychology works, the stories intertwine, you know, everything. And they will come to me and say, hey, whoa, you're not really approaching that right. You have to understand X, Y, Z.
Sure.
And that is just an extraordinary benefit of working on a show that have those people to do that. And so they were very instructive.
Okay.
Did you read any comic books before you started?
I did. Mm-hmm. But I think that is graphic narrative, I would say, as mm-hmm. opposed to comic books. But mm-hmm. The reality is, way back, as early as Kids in the Hall, I started working as I would draw all of my shots. I would draw the whole story in storyboard. And as you can see, Joe Casella there, his mm-hmm. name?
Yeah. Yep.
He is a creative head of the company, if you will.
Yes. Sure.
He's a fine artist, and he draws a lot of these concept boards for the show. And when he saw my storyboards, there, that's me. I love that part. That was good. I knew these comedy writers that used to go to movies, and they'll remain nameless, but anytime they heard the name of the name of the actual movie, they'd get up in the theater and applaud. That was their thing.
Great.
You guys know who I'm talking about. So I came upon this show as someone who was, like, I do bad drawings, but I have somebody that I work with who was extraordinary, and we would draw the whole show, and I would, at any time there was a question about it, I could show those boards to whomever, the writers, mm-hmm. and they would say, no, you missed it completely. Hmm. What's wrong with you? Or, no, that's it exactly, yeah, or something like that. Would you get more coverage this way? You know.
Yeah.
And so that was always, and in the world of Marvel, it was particularly useful because they were really into the graphic narrative.
Of course.
You know, being a show that comes from, look at that guy's build. Man, oh man.
When you're coming in as a director on a show that's already, the ball is rolling down the hill. You know, the show is happening.
Oh, yeah.
What do you do as a director? Do you go, I'm going to go full force into this, or I'm going to let the people around who have been here the whole time help me figure out the tone?
Another extraordinary, really good question, because in a case like this, it's pretty early on in the Marvel shootings, but it's still eight episodes in. So, you know, two things. One, generally speaking, the characters that are here, like, you know, there's Eldon, mm-hmm. like, he knows his character probably better than I will ever know that character.
Of course.
So I'll ask him questions, and I'll try to support him and challenge him and find new stuff for him. But basically, I respect that that's their territory, you know?
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, I'll come in. I was observing this pretty early. I was even talking to them about how they were going to be shooting possibly some of that stuff where they had the camera hung from the ceiling, you know, because they were just pulling. My friends were pulling, like, you know, Chicago versus New York. How do they shoot these stage scenes? So I was talking to them about the sort of mechanics of the show early, just in passing, but I wasn't like acting as an EP or anything like that.
Of course.
Just talking, yeah. So when I come onto the floor, this is my first day at work on the show, I was, you know, trying to find my place, mm-hmm. definitely, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm trying to fit in and trying to find, and I've watched all the dailies and I've read all the scripts and I've tried to figure out, like, how this should fit in. I'm not trying to reinvent it. I'm trying to fit into the situation,
sure.
you know.
I assume your career started mostly in comedy. right? Because yes, you had Kids in the Hall, you had Wayne's World, like all that stuff is very early.
Yep.
How does it happen that you eventually transition into more action or drama or whatever?
Well, it's interesting because I was, you know, I was as a young filmmaker, I was more pretentious than I even am now, and I was hateful of comedy. I didn't want to do comedy, and when Kids in the Hall came along, I was kind of like, well, is it even funny? You know, and so I was really, you know, reticent and always wanted to do drama.
Yeah.
That's it. Now that, you know, the world is collapsing, I would like rather do comedy than any, you know, give me the opportunity to make people laugh. Yeah. So look how dark this is. So this was Matt Lloyd shot this, a cinematographer from Canada originally. And he was, there was always a lot of tension between production and him because he liked it darker than most, you know. I don't have a dog in the fight so much as long as it seems appropriate for the scene. He's a little heavy maybe, I don't know. And because everyone's monitor is so tweaked to their personal taste nowadays, I don't know if it makes a difference that much.
Sure.
As long as you have detail in the shadows, as they say.
Do you have any pull as a director coming in to change the look of it at all, or it's very locked in?
Well, good question again. I think that I don't want to change the look of it because the DP, the designer, they've established something that is generally on the beam, as they say. However, you know, recently I was working on a gig in Chicago, and there was a script that was quite a departure from from their pattern. So, and I was looking at it going, huh, this is not the same show. So I talked to their producing director, their designer, their DP, and we didn't really reinvent the wheel, but we restructured some things a little bit to try to coincide with, look at that, New York.
Yeah. It's a good shot.
New York is so, you can't point the camera in a bad place in New York. Yeah. This is right on the water there.
Do you have a city that you like to film in the most?
Well, I got to say one thing is that I've shot in a lot of different cities, and every city has its thing, you know, and its look. And if you have the flexibility to shoot in the spots that are right for the show, you know, it will always increase the value of the show. That's a real vague thing to say. However, New York is rich with, like, people say, well, you want to shoot under a bridge again? You know, I'd say, well, you want to rather shoot in a white room or a car?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Under bridges are beautiful, and I love the bridges in New York and the buildings. It's really hard to point the camera in the wrong place.
Now, when it comes to, like, this scene, do you guys rehearse the day of, or do you have time before?
You know, it depends on the show, but in this particular case, we would just as a general run, there's usually a read-through. I don't think there was a read-through on these, or am I? I can't remember. Generally, there's a read-through. Everyone gets together in a room, and everyone reads the script. Mm-hmm. It's considered a good time to talk about issues that you might be struggling with. Here on the day, and generally, if I'm a producing director on a show, I'll try to get time to rehearse with a couple actors or scenes that are uncomfortable, or actors that I haven't worked with, so that I get a shorthand with them. But in this particular case, we walked in, we read the script, just words, and then I step back and I watch them run the lines a couple of times, and we talk about a little bit about maybe what I have in mind for how to shoot it, and then we discuss that with the DP, and then we talk about the tools a little bit. What we're going to use, you know, what it's going to be shot on. Is this handheld? Is it a Steadicam? Do you want to put it on a studio mode? And then I go outside, walk around while I light it.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Did you feel like when you were filming the Netflix Marvel stuff in New York that you guys had the run of New York? Like, were they happy to have you there?
Oh, yeah.
Did people?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a super secret deal.
Yeah.
Which I don't know any of the details of, but I do know that Netflix made a private arrangement, I believe, with Marvel. And Marvel's possibly the most successful studio ever history, you know. And they have the capability of saying, yeah, we're going to shoot 200 episodes here. What can you do for us in terms of a tax back or something like that? And they were able to make some now. So, for instance, this show does. We did have the run of New York, is the short answer, and they. Of course, New York is extremely bureaucratic in terms of shooting. You know, you can't shoot in a bike lane. You can't shoot. You can't. But when you come down to it, you want like we want to blow up a ship that was in the harbor, and there were. Oh, everybody's talking about CG, and I was going, you know, there's nothing like a good orange fucking
like a
hydrocarbon, you know, explosion. Yeah. And everybody's like, well, we can't do that near the city. They don't even allow us to use full rounds in the ammunition. And I was like, well, and sure enough, they did, because our executives got involved in pressing them and saying, look, this is what we want to do. And they said, yeah, okay, and wow. You know,
it did it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was in the episode called 038.
Oh, yes. That's the one with the Punisher stuff.
That's
in it.
The Punisher stuff. Yeah. Boom. They blew up that ship. That was really kind of big.
When in that episode, we were talking about this yesterday. There's a big the prison fight, right?
Yes. There's actually two fights in. There's a prison fight and there's a fight in the. Am I making that up? And there's a fight in the cafe.
Oh, yeah. That sounds right.
The cafe fight I adored because it was like so human scale. It was just like two bad guys and him.
Yeah.
And grisly fight. And that fight was on, like, this is odd, but that fight read as a third of a page. And they said, what do you think about this? And I said, well, that's going to take, if you want us to do exactly like that, that will take probably 2.5 days to shoot. Mm-hmm. They said, yeah, go for it. And the stunt people, we scheduled it so it was at the end of the regular shoots. We'd all go into this cafe and start shooting. But it was just 1 inch at a time. But it was really miraculous. It was a marvelous time. Yeah. The one in the prison fight that we shot in Brooklyn, but anyway, prison. I think I spent more time in that prison than most of the inmates. We shot, it was an 18 or 19 hour day with five cameras, and we shot, and I shot everything at 200 frames so that we could change the slow motion parts, you know.
How much is that, like stunt coordinators handling that? And how much
it's an enormous amount of stunt coordinators handling it. And in that particular case, they ran, they do something called a previs, and they show you that previs, the stunt coordinator. And you look at it, you go, that's great. But, you know, we had agreed that we were going to approach it with a certain style, stylistic approach. And, like in one situation, it was no cuts during the fight.
Oh, wow.
In another situation, we put our little restrictions in there. In that particular case, we had a lot of CG budget to do things like push a stick through, like a broom through someone's guts. And we spent days and days doing various renditions of the Punisher mask, the logo. And we did like three or four of them that were, I thought, extraordinary. And then on the day of the prison fight, you know, he cuts that guy's throat that's on top of him. The blood falls onto it. Then his face drops onto it, and that's the
yeah,
print.
Right. Yeah.
And even though we had done it, I think, five times finally, like, okay, perfect, they changed it in CG. You know?
Oh, wow.
So it was finally something that...
Is that devastating to you?
No, it just speaks to the process. You
sure.
know, that you can try. I like to get it in the camera, and I would have felt much better if I had managed to make that make that goal, excuse me, on my own or with our team. But we weren't. So
yeah.
Now there's CG. You know, you can fit that in, and it worked fine. And as long as they're happy with what they get, I go there really with the objective of, you know, trying to bring the best out of the actors and really trying to make the showrunner happy.
Mm-hmm.
And every showrunner has their own kind of reality they're working in. So it's trying to figure out how they see the world.
Yeah.
Now, does this allow for a longer shooting schedule than a normal, like, weekly show?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. This show in particular, this was right at as I mentioned just earlier, as I said, the peak TV. Mm-hmm. So we were meeting in a boardroom talking about the schedule, and Chori, who was the producing, sort of the line producer on the show, the executive line producer, said, you know, you don't have enough time this day to do what you have to do. And I was like, what? Did I hear right? Is there something in my ear? And he said, no, I'm going to add a couple hours there. And then he said, okay, over here, you should add something else. And this, you're never going to do a great job with it. We want an award with this show, so we want you to do your very best work. We're going to add a little time on that. Hmm. And I was like, I've never heard this before. Look at that tool there. That's amazing,
really cool
little thing.
It's really, yeah.
He reads. He can read off the internet with that with his hands. Anyway, I'm just speaking of the
the Braille. Yeah.
Daredevil's auto Braille reader.
Yeah,
it's pretty amazing. Anyway, so yeah, so they added time and until it was, you know, until now, I would always use the time. Some bad directors would finish early. I would say, don't finish early. You'll ruin it for all of us.
Well, I'll say this. I PA'd one day on The Punisher.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was not, I checked today, it was not an episode that you directed.
Okay.
But it was an 18-hour day, and it was in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
And it was truly, like, it was the longest day I'd ever worked on. Oh, my gosh.
Grueling.
It was my job. My job was to lock up the woods.
God almighty, poor
which
you.
Which is just, like, a nightmare.
Where? Like, is there a bear out here? Like, how do I?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that you have
but
to go through that.
You know, you're saying that. I'm like, yeah, I believe that these are very long shoot days, and you get as much as you can get out of it.
And, they, you know, I had these producers saying to me, we're going to give you extra time, but do not go home. First of all, get all your coverage, and do not go early. I mean, if you're going to go early, half an hour, whatever, but do not, like, cut the day.
Yeah.
Look at these guys. These guys are such great actors here.
Everyone's got a great look in this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Like, they all look like they either belong in a comic book or just, like, a gritty New York.
But they feel lived in. You believe they have lives outside of this moment.
Yeah.
And I said the same thing on the day when they'd show up. I'd be like, wow, you guys, the call was perfect. I'm like, these guys were all so good at what they did. It was always, kind of felt special to be there, you know? Because, like, look at Kingpin walks in like that, you know?
Also, that shot is lit so cool. Like, the windows in the back are...
Yeah, the yellow.
It's amazing.
Yeah, and that's largely the DP was really, really talented guy. He's off to win Academy Awards now. You know, he's left us all behind. I think I feel a footprint on my head.
How much of a hand did you have in casting? And I guess that's in general, too. Do you like having a hand in casting? Or?
I do. Yeah. There are some people that are extraordinary at casting, you know, and they're just really, the choices are really good. I don't feel as secure as some of those guys, but I'm better than, let me say, there's a lot of beginners out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I listen to the actors and speak with them and see how they fit with the other actors. Mm-hmm. I think I have a certain level of confidence, and I like to be involved because I've got to deal with them on the stage. And if they can't deliver what it is we're looking for in the room, then they're probably not going to be capable of doing it on stage. And you'll all often hear from, never on Marvel, but you'll hear from a producer, well, you're just going to have to, you know, like, direct them and get it out of them. And you know, what you see is what you get often.
Sure.
Sometimes you can dig something out. This little kid that came in and played this role of a kingpin as a 10-year-old, I was very concerned. I'd finished a movie that was about a bad kid, and the bad kid was an extraordinary actor. So I knew what it meant to have a good one, and I was horrified that if we didn't have a good one, what it would mean to the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, they brought him to me. This is the guy we want to use. I was like, oh my God. Are you sure? So they brought him in, and I tested him. I went out with them. We worked on the stage.
And you punched him.
I slapped him around. I made him cry. No, he was an extraordinary young man.
Yeah.
Who had lots of talents. And really sold it on the day. You know.
Did Vincent work with him at all? So they have similar looks or reactions?
We introduced them so that they would spend a little time together. And actually, I just did that on Reacher, too. It was odd. In Reacher, you know, I was basically hard to direct a lot of the flashbacks of the kids before the other show had started.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, wow.
Which is...
You're a kids guy. It's
really weird because it should be that way because they started it.
Yeah,
right?
It started there.
But I would always, I called, I remember Richmond and said, you know, here's, and I put them together and leave them on the Zoom or something like that. But it's really important to get a connection. That there's something that they're doing that is consistent, you know, throughout their lives. Anyway, in this particular case, they did that. They spent a little time together. Mm-hmm. I try to get out of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, but I make it happen and then I get out. And one of the things that we did with that kid is this is such a dark scene here.
Love the scene. It's my favorite one in the scene episode.
It's
I love how dirty the needle is with
comes out of the sandwich.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. The scene was lit. The tubes were put out of sync by the DP by. And so Matt, everyone would see how it's flickering. So everyone would walk by the room and say, "Hey, Matt, your lights are out of sync." And he's fucking shut up. it really was a good look. And this is dark as night here. Injecting the
this guy's with, great because you feel bad. For him, as he's killing his friend. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. I'm sorry, man. I don't mean to do it.
Do you prefer the TV schedule or versus the movie schedule?
A great question. And I would argue that it really depends on the material. But I went to London to work on The Witcher. Mm. So I did the opening shows for The Witcher in season 2 and 3, and those opening episodes. Well, in the first case. You know, there was COVID, there's a bunch of things that happened, but it was basically, I went there for a 3-month commitment, and a year and a half later, I came back to LA. It was wildly protracted. I went straight to some Dick Wolf shows and just hammered through, week schedules for like 1, 2, 3 in a row just to get it out of my system, because I thought, have I lost my, my mojo here? What's happening? So there's real value in being able to block a scene, shoot a scene, see the dailies, and do that in repeated and see how people are progressing and how they're tracking. When you're shooting one shot a day, it gets pretty abstract.
Sure.
You don't know what you're doing anymore. Eventually, you're just going like, what am I doing here?
Is that one of the reasons why you were brought in for Wayne's World 2? Because that was such a quick turnaround. Like, that movie came out less than a year after the first one, right?
It not only came out a year after the first we prepped a completely different show. Like, I came into that arena, and Mike Myers said, I got this idea. We're going to do something called, did you ever see Passport to Pimlico? Yep. And I was like, yeah, I did. And he said, well, we're going to do like a hybrid of that where these guys take over. Their whole suburb becomes a country. They make their own currency. And I was like, that's great. So I started reading the script. I started storyboarding the show, started doing location work. And I did that for about 8 weeks. And then we all got called to the office. And the office, Sherry Lansing said, no, you don't have the rights for that movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And we went, pardon me? I was like, well, I'm out. We got to shoot this in 2 weeks. Yeah. You get something else. That'll be okay. I'm good. They said, no, you're not. You're going to stay here with these guys. You're all going to do it, or you're all going to end up in debtor's prison. So I'm like, oh, okay. And that's how it started. 2 weeks later, we were shooting.
Wait, did he write a script in 2 weeks for a new movie?
Yes. Yes. Did along with the
Bonnie.
Yeah, with Bonnie.
Right. Bonnie and Terry.
Bonnie and Terry. And everyone else that wrote part, like it was, they excuse the expression, they gangbang the script.
Right.
Of course.
So good. Consider, man.
Well,
that's crazy.
It doesn't suck. I'll tell you something. we were doing tests, they fly you around and they show it to a group of people. And some young man stands up. He's about 8 or 10 years old. He said, at the end, this is what I would do. Those ideas are pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, they're like really open-minded. Yeah. They're smart. And then you hear some other ideas that aren't as smart. You go, oh, God, what are we going to do? Mike Myers grabbed the bull by the horns and he said, and we watched in his, in our hotel room, it was in New York. We started watching the ends of various films like, Thelma and Louise and all these different films. And he started talking about doing this sort of patch together of a whole bunch of different, this is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly I think it was, cause we were looking at a release date, and I think we had like 8 days to get it in the can and get it up, and we were freaking out. So all of a sudden, we were on a bunch of aircraft moving 3 crews around the desert and everywhere and trying to get this thing done. It was a blur to me. I don't really remember.
Yeah.
Did you fly to London for the second unit stuff where Wayne and Garth are?
No.
Okay. That's real in the movie when they say
it
is not real.
Okay. It is. And that was Barnaby Thompson. He was the junior producer. He was like Lauren's guy. Mm-hmm. I was Lauren's guy too, but I was the director. And he was a good guy. Like Barnaby and I ended up fast friends. He went to London with them just to shoot those little pieces. Well, we were mixing, I believe. I can't remember exactly how that went down, but that's kind of how it went down. Then he later in life, he said, well, I've got the rights to do a movie about the, what is that band called? you know, the what are they fucking called? I can't remember the name of them. It was like they're sporty and
Spice Girls.
Thank
Girls.
You,
yeah.
Thank you. There's a rotten part of my brain there, yeah. My brain worm. so the Spice Girls, he had the rights to the Spice Girls movie, and he was interested in me helping with that, but I was couldn't go there, couldn't do that.
Yeah,
he did it, and you know, when they started to sell, in L.A. here, we went to the opening. And he retained the rights for the DVDs at the time.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
Yeah, so he ended up buying Ealing Studio with that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So he's doing fine.
Yeah, he did okay.
Do you wish you had directed Spice World?
No. Okay. No, I went, I visited, and I hung out with them while they were shooting and did my best to support them. And I remember all kinds of adventures there. It was a show that was, I think, good times, but you mm-hmm. know, was it funny enough? It came off, it was a lot like the way Wayne's World was in its rush, you know, into mm-hmm. production. I wanted to spend more time
right
getting it wrong.
I mean, maybe the Wayne's World 2 thing, the fact that the schedule was so truncated helped it because it kept the energy up and the yep. studio couldn't say no to certain yep. stuff because yeah. you had yep. to do it.
It just kept coming at us. That's
it's
true.
So great.
That's
and true. Smart. It's such a smart sequel.
Well, that's very kind of you to say that. We always talked about it being a smart, stupid movie, or stupid, smart movie.
Yeah.
Doing straight.
The best
jokes
kinds
in a smart
of movies.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a shot a second ago that I do want to go back to really quick. I do want to talk more about Wayne's World, but he was hitting the bottles with the baseball bat.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And the camera is moving. It's not a fixed off shot.
Right. Right.
How do you do something like that?
I don't exactly remember. I think that we just did it with lens and maybe a remote head. I don't.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Because you would expect that shot to just be locked off. No one's near it. You know, they're
right.
They're shooting glass at you, basically. Like
yeah, firing. And that's, yeah. I think, why we had to have. Well, it was candy glass, but nevertheless, it's the same
yeah,
thing
yeah.
coming at you.
I guess. That's
so
fair.
we had a remote, some kind of remote, which at the time was kind of exciting, but mm-hmm. nowadays. People shoot entire, like everybody shoots with a remote, like, you know, mm-hmm. the remote head.
Mm-hmm. Mm. What's been the biggest technological change since you started directing that you like?
That I like?
Yeah.
And then we'll do.
Yeah, and then we'll go to the other one too. Yeah.
Well, you know, let me start by talking about, I was directing an episode of Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to the actor about him coming up this hill, and we had a big cramp. And he was gonna, and they said, "Whoa! You don't need him coming up to help." I was like, "No, no, we've got that. We've scanned him. We'll just bring him up to hill." And I said, "Oh, okay." I said, "So you're gonna meet this girl here, and she's, you guys are gonna talk about that?" And they were nodding their heads. Yeah, that's right. I said, "Then you're gonna see that tank coming. You're gonna, no, he doesn't have to do that. That's, we got that."
Oh my gosh.
And I could see my career disappearing in front of my eyes. Well, all of our careers. Disappeared in front of our eyes.
Mm.
So, yeah, that was something that happened 7 or 8 years ago.
Wow.
So, you know, this apartment is right in
it's
in Lower Manhattan, and it is owned by the guy who invented the email for AOL.
Wow.
He owns patents for about, anyway, it's like three stories in it, and it's more spectacular than it appears, but I mean, it's really, somehow I didn't, man, it was hard to shoot the whole scale of it.
It's always interesting hearing who rents out their places for shooting, you know?
Right. Yeah.
When you're like, oh, this guy invented this, or this guy did this, and you're like, that's crazy.
And he was the nicest guy in the world, and his wife was an architect, and his son wanted to see what we were doing. I think that's why we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great, and he was absolutely.
There are people that pay their rent for their houses. Just renting it out, like Pasadena.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And Christmas Story Block.
Oh, yeah.
It's just become a museum to Christmas Story.
That's in Cleveland. Right. Everybody, they all share this.
Yes.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. These guys had splatter from 9/11 on the rooftop.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
that's how close they were to the...
Wow.
Yep. Anyway, their water... you know, they have these water towers in New York. Mm-hmm. You know what they... that are featured in a lot of these Daredevil episodes, but they're made by one family. One family makes those things, theirs was punctured by a piece of plane.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's not even something I would ever think about. You know, that was also impacted by it. Like, that would never even cross my mind.
Just there. Well, this guy started talking to us. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
And he was, well, I mean, he had a good view. You know?
Yeah.
Let's call it what
she's
it
so great. In this
she's
too.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And he had to learn how to speak Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. And it was really impressive. And so I just joined along. I know I have a friend who speaks a couple languages, including Mandarin and Cantonese. And she taught me just to say a couple things. Like, that was a good take.
Mm.
And she looked at me.
You guys had to do a Cantonese scene in Wayne's World too, when Wayne fights Cassandra's father.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Well, and he's a great.
Oh my God,
yeah. Dude, he's one of the great dudes.
Was that one of your first action scenes you ever directed in Wayne's?
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is, I sort of did again the blocks of that scene, and then I had to leave it and leave little pieces of it, like the close-ups of the balls hitting the ground, mm-hmm. for my second unit director, because I just didn't have time to do those little pieces, you mm-hmm. know. So he did a lot of. I think he did that, and he did two other shots in that sequence. But anyway.
Are you a guy who is okay with second unit directors doing a bunch of stuff, or do you want to have the hand on all that?
I would rather shoot it myself, but if not, I've storyboarded everything, and as long as they follow the cutout, you know, it's mm-hmm. not, it doesn't really matter. I don't want to sound like I'm trying to emulate anyone.
No, who's of course.
Bald, big, white, fat, bald guy like Hitchcock, but that's basically how we work, right? As long as you follow the... Now, I've had experiences where I'm, there's a cameraman going, okay, go out. We need the car going by, moving right. That's all I care about, move right. And I know when you go out there, you're not going to see anything on that side of the street, but still, just make sure the car, they come back and it's moving left.
Yeah.
You go, wow. God, why are we even talking?
Who's intimidated you?
Oh, many.
Other than
many.
Me and Patrick.
Yeah, other than
us.
Yeah.
So many. I mean, I'll tell you what happened in my little world. I was hired once to be a producing director on a show called Burn Notice.
Oh, and love Burn Notice, by the way.
Thank Bruce Campbell.
God, Campbell. Okay.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell, the great. And there were some actors on that show. One actor in particular that remained nameless was tough.
Mm-hmm.
Not Bruce Campbell.
We already
not
said Bruce. His name.
But no, it wasn't Bruce. Bruce was good people.
People love him.
And listen, they were all good people. But there was one person. There was somebody that were really, really challenging. And the entire company was living in a world of hell. They were in a toxic work environment. And the company was like, well, do you want this job as producing director? You'll be the middle guy. With it. I was like, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure why I took that. It became very clear to me that I did it so I would get over my fear of intimidation of mm-hmm. actors. Mm-hmm. Because normally, as a director, you're really well-versed in camera, technology shots. But how do you speak to an actor? How do you understand their problems, their thinking? Well, and are you afraid to be yelled at?
Mm.
Well, if you are, it's going to be hard to get by. So I just sucked it up for about 2 years. And then I walked out of that. And when they said, D'Onofrio, I said, bring him on. And it was great because if an actor sort of feels that you're like a little bit, worried about things, they'll eat you alive.
They walk all over.
They just eat your hands like a bear.
Charlton Heston.
Oh my God.
That's an early one for you. You know what I mean? Like, you're starting with Charlton Heston. Like
Christopher Walken.
That's true too, yeah.
Well, Christopher Walken really did intimidate me because I'm such a big fan of his work and I didn't know where to begin. Like, I watched him and tried to help him. But like,
was he cast in the original version?
No.
So that was a last second,
probably called that in.
Yeah.
He was like, I remember when it came up and I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And it was, I forget who in his casting department came up with mm-hmm. that. But he has relationship with him, loves him. They like each other, so he did it. And it was great. This guy here, I don't know if you ever watched The Wire, but he is a fantastic actor.
He's also great on Entourage.
Dominique, that's right. Dominique. And we talked a lot about this role beforehand because it was like this guy who beats his wife. He was like, what am I doing here?
It's an unlikable character.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy's not a douchebag. That's what we have to agree. Like, we have to agree that whatever this guy does, it makes sense for his universe and he's not.
Mm.
Now, as you can see, it takes a little bit of rationale to get around that, you know, because he's a monster. Mm-hmm. This guy's father's a monster.
Yeah.
But we just worked our way around that. And how could we? Yeah, it was like I looked at Raging Bull and I was like, how did they do it? Like, how did they make Raging Bull a character that you gave a shit about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we talked a lot about that. He's a fantastic actor and he did a fantastic job.
Is there anyone you haven't worked with that you'd like to work with?
Oh my God,
yes. Or any shows, you know, either way.
Oh yeah.
Or a genre.
Yeah.
Just throw out a lot of questions at you. Let's start with that. Let's start with actors.
Yes, to all of them. I think that you know, there's a lot of really classy actors out there that when you, I just finished a show with Netflix. It was, we only did 8 episodes of it, but it was with, Lena Headey and Miss X-Files.
Gillian Anderson.
Gillian Anderson is like, they both are really fine actors.
Yeah.
And it was such an ordeal just to watch them, because they would be in the middle of stop, start again, and then dig in a different way.
Yeah.
And you go, wow, they are really mining something precious here. So I learned a lot by watching them. But every actor has their own thing and their own way of getting to it, and it's always unique. And I always have to remind myself that you have to approach every actor with a whole new set of eyes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, like, you know, Gene Hackman was someone I would have loved to have worked with.
Yeah,
I think he's like one of the few. Like, he's a man's man.
Mm-hmm. Right?
He's a man. You know, there's so few guys. There was Jack Nicholson, maybe, but there was so few guys that were like Gene Hackman. I was only one, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And it's a great loss, and I feel kind of heartbroken. Mm. But there's. Look, we were talking about Lost when I came in. I love Lost. I would have loved to have worked on Lost. I thought Lost was out of this world.
Well, you did an X-Files.
I did.
I heard you asked to do it. Is that true?
I walked right into the office with Chris and said, I would love to do an episode of the show. And he was like, you've done a comedy. You know, but we sat down, but in 15 or 20 minutes, he had hired me. It was weird. Wow. It was the only time I've really been successful at one of those pitches. And it was only because I was a geek.
Yeah.
I knew everything that I watched everything they were doing. I wasn't so lucky with my script in that case. Mm-hmm. You know how what I said, I got lucky on this script, because this script was really well written. It fit into everything. Mm-hmm. It was at the right time. Here he is getting hit in the head with a hammer. And it was like the perfect fit. And then they hired me for everything after that. You know, X-Files wasn't the case. And I'm just going to say that out loud. It was the script came in. Chris said, throw it away. Don't even read it. And I was like, what? He said, no, I'm going to rewrite it from scratch. I said, okay. So we were shooting scenes unconnected to other scenes.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
tough.
So it got over budget. It was tough to
shoot.
That's
hard.
Yeah. It was a tough show.
Was that I remember the episode. There were special effects in that one. Was that
ghosts.
Because it's ghosts. Yeah.
And mushrooms.
Yes. Yes.
And old people making connections with the spirits. It was, again, it was sort of a departure for them. So it played a lot and I got, you know, kind of residuals from it, but it was not one of the best X-Files ever made. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But that's hard when you do 250 episodes or whatever they've done. Like, they can't all be winners, and it stinks that you got stuck with one of the ones.
I just got unlucky that time.
It's a long season, right?
Like it's true, 25 episode season or whatever.
Yeah, back in the day, that's what they did. They just did them until, look at this. They saw, this is one of my favorite lines in this, is when Mom says, get the saw.
I love the idea that he's not dead yet. Right before she says, get the saw, you see the fingers twitch.
The hands, we're going to chop him up before he even... Before his heart has stopped.
And you guys actually did this, right? You chopped him up?
That's why he has not been in anything since.
We weren't supposed to talk about that. You guys promised me that wasn't going to go on record. And so we chop him up and we just threw him in the Hudson. It was in little packages, one package a day.
Mm-hmm.
And there he is.
You guys filmed in Brooklyn, right? Was it Brooklyn Stages? Is that where these were?
Yeah, but we were in Greenpoint.
Oh yeah! Oh yes! Yes! Yes!
Across from they took over those stages that they use for The Good Wife and The Good Fight and all those stages we took. They're small. New York stages are like,
you got to squeeze it in wherever you can.
Yeah. And then we get outside and we shoot outside. And this, There was something I did with this kid that was because he, I wanted the actor to be able to interact with him. And what did I do? I had a camera that went back through a feedback loop and had them both in it so that they could emulate each other in the mirror.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. And then Alfio really dug that. He was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Who have you worked with more than once that you like working with? Is there any actors or any showrunners or anything on multiple projects that you've done?
You know, I worked with, on this series, I worked with someone by the name. Actually, what happens is you find out that, oh, that person that I was working with, who was one of the writers on this show, not this episode, but on 038 and on... and on one of the Punisher shows, and she ended up doing doing work on Umbrella Academy.
Oh, okay.
And she called me, and I was, and she said, "You should come and look at Umbrella Academy. You might find it, I think you'll find it really interesting." I was like, "Oh, okay." And I read it, and I was like, "I'm not sure how this works. Like, I just didn't. I'm not proud of this. I just did." And I called. I said, "I don't." She said, "Well, you know, take a moment, you know." And so I signed up, and she was on the show, and I was working on this script 6 and 7 for a season, and they brought me the first episode completed. I signed my NDA, and I watched it. I went, oh, man, now I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's a cool pilot.
And I'm going to go back to scratch, and I started my prep over again, and it was a great experience. She left the show one day after she got there. And she went to London and started her own show called Witcher.
Oh, yeah.
So you see, then she invited me to join the Witcher team. And I went there. And so, yeah, I worked with her on multiple episodes of multiple shows, including this.
Yeah. He's so good in this, too.
Isn't he?
It's
fantastic.
A great scene. Yeah. One of the most shocking deaths on TV was when they killed him off.
Yeah.
Because he's so important to the comic. And figured he'd be driving the
forever
pressure.
Yeah,
yeah,
and he's so good.
He's so good.
God, he's good. Look at this. I crossed the line here. I go over the other side. Oh, because a scene has shifted, and they go, what? And that's I learned from Chris. On X-Fall.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of diseases that are spread by virus here on the the show.
Did you have to ADR this whole scene because of the rain?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, the show. Steve DeKnight It was, you know, we were finding areas where they could be under because, you know, the producers were saying, well, you're not going to leave them in the fucking rain. And I was like, well, yeah, you're right. I won't do that. So we were finding like little hangoffs that were water would just. Then we got on the phone and the showrunner called and said, no, you got it wrong. And again, I had the storyboards. He looked at, no, that's not what, because you see, there's a thing that they could stand under.
Yeah.
No, they're standing under the rain.
Yeah.
And they stand there until they finish talking. And I'm like, got it. Okay, I understand now. And that's what we did. We heated the water. They're wearing wetsuits. Mm-hmm. But still, their body temperatures are dropping like precipitously.
Sure. Yeah. Do you remember what time of year this was?
Yes.
Because you can see their breath.
Oh, no, it's cold.
Yeah.
It's cold outside. I mean, it's also the humidity is high here, so you can see it. But it was cold out. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, the water was warmer, but still there. It's evaporating. It's fucking, and I've got weather gear on, and I'm running around in this shit, and I'm soaking wet in 3 minutes, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
So
it looks cool though, so it's worth it. Yeah. I think in the end, right?
You know, they say, you know, long lens, rain, backlight, and maybe if you put it on fire. Those are the three magical.
Have you found? You know, they also say, what is it? Animals and children.
Yeah.
Do you good with kids though?
Yeah, you are good with kids. Are you good with animals too?
Yeah, animal. You know, it depends on the animal. Like
Mike Myers.
Yeah, Mike and I were always good.
That's amazing.
Mike and I were always good, but you know, we had a pledge which we would always go to each other and not go to other political help.
That's
you
know? Good. Okay. Yeah.
And since he outweighed me by about $7 trillion a year, I was at a disadvantage in that, and I only really broke that promise at the end. When I finished my edit, I went to Sherry Lanson, and I said, what do you want to do now? And she said, why are you talking to me? And I said, well, because I'm done my cut, and he wants to recut, so what do you want to do, you know? And she said, oh, you're clever boy, you know.
Right.
And I was like, well, I'm political. I just want to save my life. And you know, and Mike wasn't crazy about the cut, but he didn't hate it, you know. And So there were some changes, and Lord made some changes, and everyone made some changes. And nothing scored as high as my original cut. Right. That was in 91 minutes.
Is that right? The cut that...
Short. No, it was 89. Oh, and then The cut that went to screen is 93, I think. Okay. Anyway, every minute you add on, your scores plummet.
Yep.
You know.
Especially with comedy, it feels too.
When they say brevity is the soul of wit.
Yeah. How is Lauren in the editing room?
Lauren doesn't show his face in the editing room. He just comes, he watches the preview and he feels the room and he says... And he says, fix that, change that. And you go for dinner after, and he runs over a list of stuff that he wants you to do. And somebody's taking notes during, you know.
Yeah.
I only got yelled at once, you know, during a task screening.
Really?
And, you know, I got blessed Lauren. Lauren's like, I owe so much to Lauren. He's such a great mentor. But we were in a test screening, and he just turned to me. He yelled so loud and so hard and scared me so much. I thought he had hit someone else.
Wow.
I thought, who is she? It was me.
Right, right. You know?
And it was because of something, and I swear to God, I had made 130 changes in the cut, and there was one thing that I didn't, and I trimmed it, but I didn't take it right out. And he didn't like that. He wanted it out. So we took it out. He's the, you know, he is the man.
He's the kingpin of Wayne's World.
That's right. Lauren is like, I was always like so pretentious. Because of the kids in the hall, he would bring me and talk to me about stuff. And I was, you know, always, I was just young and ignorant. But, you know, he would always give me advice. And it all makes more sense now than it did then. But at the time, I was sort of like the no guy. It's like, I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. I don't like that. And he liked me for that, I think. And as soon as I started saying, yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea. Then I was out.
Gotcha.
Goodbye.
Okay, we'll talk about Daredevil in a sec. One more question about Wayne's World, too. So Dana Carvey's subplot with Kim Basinger.
Yes.
Was that all Dana Carvey?
Yes.
Yeah, he wrote
his part. So what happened is the script was churned out in those two weeks, whatever, and it was presented. Everyone read it, and everyone noticed that Dana wasn't in the movie.
Yeah.
So Lauren carved out a piece for him, and I think Dana and the Turners worked that out. I'm not sure exactly how that worked out, but it was funny stuff.
It's great.
And she was amazing. Like, I remember coming to the stage and like everyone were waiting. When she showed up, when she finally walked on the set, everybody went like, wow.
Right.
Wow, that is really, really, that was worth it. She was sitting on a couch. I can't do this.
You can do it. You can do it. Just go for it. Sitting on a couch. And
I noticed that everyone in the studio was like, all these executives were lined up over. Like, what are they all doing?
Oh, okay. I didn't see where this was going. Now I do.
Sure, 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 sure.
So, and I'm just sitting on the couch with them talking. And then I turn on to actually direct them.
Uh huh.
And I'm now talking to her.
I'm Kim Basinger for the listener right now.
And I went, wow. And I didn't know whether to call wardrobe, hair, or makeup.
Oh, that's good. Sure.
That's a good line.
I've worked that for
a while.
I like that one.
I like that story.
And I turned around and I heard the ocean in my head, and I saw 150 executives staring with their mouths open.
Oh, boy.
And I went, God.
Yeah. Different time.
Different times.
Not that kind of movie.
Bob Gunton. Let's talk about Bob Gunton back here in the background.
Shawshank.
What
Gordon.
A guy. He's great in it. This is Downtown.
Same story. It's with Kim Basinger, by the way.
Yeah, with Bob Gunton.
Yes, it does not wear underwear.
Yeah.
Same thing. Crazy.
This is Downtown. This is near City Hall, maybe?
This
or is this Brooklyn?
This is actually, where is this? They have this, these steps. Where is this? This is Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Brooklyn. This is such a good part in the movie when he's looking at the thing he's going to write. It's so poignant for today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will.
Oh, of course. Well, I think that's why they're bringing him back into the Marvel universe at the moment, is because it feels very of the moment and feels very, you know.
Do you know that that's how the Daredevil movie ends as well? It's Joey Pants plays the same character, and he deletes the story he's writing.
Is that right?
Yeah,
that
isn't that weird?
That's interesting.
I've worked with Joey Pants.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Joey Pants stories?
Yeah, I got Joey Pants stories. Wearing no pants, actually.
Oh, Joey no pants.
Joey no pants. He was on the street. He was in his underwear without his hair on, like yelling at everyone.
Was Pooh Bear?
And he was just looking at the people gathered around. Our customers. He's so good with
his fans.
Yeah. He's amazing. He's great. Yeah.
I was next to him at a restaurant, and he was pitching America's Next Top Character Actor reality show.
That
and
rules.
He was going to host it. This was 20 years ago, else I wouldn't be saying
rules.
It. But yeah, he wanted to do it. It would have been so nice.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
What are your takeaways from Daredevil as this episode?
Or Wayne's World 2.
Well, I think that this was a really important episode for me, not just because it got me into the family of the Marvel Universe, but because it was a show that was so well written and so well acted. We even had a Rolling Stone song in it. You know what I mean? Like, there's really not much more you can wish for. It shot in New York, and it all worked out. And and I think that the politics of the story are so relevant for today and for every day. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't underline those because they'll seem like too ham-fisted. But, you know, it's about corruption, and it's about, the way that people cave to corruption in City Hall and in politics in general. Yeah. So what else is there to say than that?
Thanks for making it.
When will the firing squads begin? I don't know.
We'll see. Wilson Fisk, what a guy. thank you for watching this with us.
Thank you for taking the time, guys. It was a real pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
Daredevil, what a guy. Matt Murdock, should I be saying that? I don't want to spoil it. Very fun show, and this new season's really cool. I'm excited to see what they do in season two. It's nice to have them all come back because they all seem like they really want to be there and they really want to be working on it. I used to work at Marvel pre-COVID, and I did a few things with Charlie Cox in between, you know, when he at least publicly had not said he was coming back. I don't think he actually knew he was coming back, but he was very nice and charming, and it was one of those things where I was like, I want this guy to work so much more because I really like him. And it's always nice when you run across an actor of that stature, of that caliber, who's like really nice to everybody that they're meeting. And he's one of those guys. So I'm very happy they're back. I'm very happy he's showing up in other things and that people from this universe are coming back in the MCU proper. I think we're getting a Punisher Disney Plus special, and then he's going to be in the Spider-Man movie too. Spoilers. I think that's all public knowledge. I'm not speaking out of school. I don't work there anymore. Thank you for tuning in. Have a really fun episode next week. Hope to see you guys soon. Bye. I love you. Thanks for listening to Hey That's Me, a commentary podcast. This has been a That Was Just So Funny production. Your hosts have been Brian Lynch and Patrick Kottner. Music was by Alex Peabody, and our art was by Abigail Noy. You can find out more about the show by going to heythatsmepod.com and checking out our Patreon at patreon.com/commentary. The show was recorded by Stephen Ray Morris. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Please tell your friends about this show.